Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this week I'm sharing with you my conversation I had with Rikban Mazumdar, PhD, who shares with us his experience of coming to the States and eventually landing a job in industry. So, hope you enjoy. I'm excited to chat with you because sometimes, you know, I interview people that I know already, and so I know the answers to these questions. And for you, mm-hmm. I don't know anything. So
right.
This is great. So why don't you start by telling me a little bit about your, you know, we can go back to your bachelor's.
Okay.
And what you were studying, and at what point you sort of decided you wanted to pursue a PhD.
Okay, so I did my undergrad from India,
okay.
And I had three majors, which was biochemistry, biotechnology, and chemistry. But I always had an interest in chemistry, so I just wanted to keep, you know, other options open as well.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, like, there was a lot of hype about biotechnology, and then there were a lot of research which was already going on in that era. So I was also interested in biotechnology as well. So those were three of my majors. And I did my undergraduate from Osmania University, that is in Hyderabad, India.
Okay.
And so basically for the undergrad, we did not have any kind of research like per se. So it was just a curriculum based, like a 3-year course and all. After that, what happened was that I actually had a job offer after the end of my bachelor's.
Okay.
So I actually had a job offer, and I thought I should try probably and see how that works. So I got my first job, and I worked in a company called Dr. Reddy Laboratories. That's also in Hyderabad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pharmaceutical company, and I was working as an analytical chemist over there.
Okay.
But when I went and when I started working, right, at that moment, it hit that this place is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to do higher studies. And then, so then just after a 1 year of experience and then how the pharma world looks like, I decided to pursue my master's. And I did my master's in chemistry from a university called Vellore Institute of Technology. That's also in India.
Okay.
So there, my specialization was completely in organic chemistry.
Hmm.
And so in that, we had, like, for the last 6 months of the course, there was an option of to pursue research. So at that time, I wanted to try out, and I started working and reaching out to different professors in India with different universities. And I finally got an internship at a prestigious university, that is IIT Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
So there I had the chance of working with Professor Rodney Fernandez to carry out my research. And that was completely in organic synthesis, methodology, asymmetric synthesis. It was completely organic chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So once that kicked in and I was, like, doing my research and all, that was a time when I decided that I want to do my PhD. And it was, like, I would say that motivation was partly from me, as well as it was partly from my faculty and my mentors, because they also, like, they advised me, like, right, it's good for you that if you continue your further studies and further research and everything like that. So and I also wanted to do that. So that's why at the end of it, like, I took a break. I did some courses and all, and then I applied for the PhD in US.
Wow. So that's so interesting. So, you know, I'm sure there's some, like, quote about this, but, like, all the decisions you make, you
yeah.
know, in your life lead you here, right? And so, you know, your job opportunity
mm-hmm.
sent you back to school, and then you were lucky enough to kind of try or feel like you wanted to try the research thing, and that led you to get your PhD. Did you just like research as a whole, or did you feel like you wanted to study chemistry like deeper? Do you know what I mean?
So I like the concept of research. So basically, like when I started doing the research for my project, like for my 6 months of internship, at that time, like what really sort of made my interest was that whatever chemistry that we were doing, right, we were synthesizing compounds, we were doing isolation and like studying the behavior of the molecule and as such, but also those compounds had interesting medicinal properties. So since I already had a background of the pharma company, right, like then what intrigued me was that like these molecules also have medicinal chemistry, and these molecules eventually are going to become drugs. So that's what like made me like think about that thing, like then okay, let me synthesize compounds, do the isolation and all those kind of usual, you know, all like everyone does that, but then if I can use this kind of technology and then can make compounds which can also act as drugs, so that's something that really really interested me.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. So you saw the potential of kind of what you were working on and how it could benefit the world, which is always a cool feeling. When you were applying to PhD programs, and did you definitely want to come to the US, and what types of programs were you applying to?
So I this is actually a funny story. Like I have a very close friend. We are from the same batch, like we did our masters, and he wanted to do his PhD from Canada because for some reason, and then like we were hanging out and all, and then we like decided like okay, let me also apply for some places like I'm definitely applying to US, but let me also try and apply to Canada as well. So basically US and Canada are those two places where I have actually like applied for my PhD, and I did not get acceptance from Canada, but I got acceptance from this University of Illinois at Chicago, and that's what like I decided to come here.
That's great.
Yeah.
Were you looking for organic chemistry programs or other types of chemistry programs?
I was looking for organic chemistry programs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you think about, where is that? Is that in Detroit? Where is that?
No, it was in Chicago.
Chicago. I don't know why I said Detroit. They're the same.
Yeah, it was in Chicago.
Chicago. Yeah. So did you like being in Chicago?
Oh, I loved Chicago. That was like my, sort of, I can say that was my second home. And I have not lived in a big city in India. I mean, I have been to very different places, and I sort of like left my home just after my school. So I did my bachelor's from outside. I did my master's from outside, but it was never a big city as such. So Chicago was my first big city experience. And yeah, I love Chicago. The only thing that I regret was that if Chicago had a milder weather, I would probably be living there for my lifetime. But I love Chicago and I still love it.
Yeah, I hear people who live in Chicago or come from Chicago are all very much fans of it, I think, except for the harsh weather sometimes.
Yes. Otherwise, there's no reason to hate Chicago.
So tell me about your research group when you were at U Chicago.
UIC. So it's University of it's not U Chicago, it's University of Illinois at Chicago. So it's UIC.
Okay.
Yeah.
UIC.
Good. Yeah. So when my application was accepted and when I was being offered the position of the graduate like teaching assistantship. So I came here and we had a sort of a small program where you were able to approach different professors who are working in, the field of organic chemistry or the area of your interest. So I reached out to three professors. So the thing that I would like to say here is that I did my research before coming, when I got my acceptance letter, right? So at that time, I started researching about the different professors who were in the university. So I had a clear vision about the fact that, okay, these are the professors who I want to pursue my research with. So that's a very important thing. Like if you are really interested in doing a PhD and a PhD, it's better to have a clear understanding of what kind of work that you are looking for, and if there are, professors who are available for that particular kind of work. So I made my research, and then once I came here, I reached out to them via email, and then they also said that, okay, we know that you are here, and since it's a formality for the department, so we would like to schedule a meeting where we can discuss both about your interest and what kind of work that we are doing, what kind of funds we have, and then it also depends on whether he's interested in me, right? Because there are other students who are also approaching the same faculty. So yeah, so with that, with mutual understanding, there were two professors who I wanted to work with. One of them is Professor Neil Mankad, and another one is Professor Tom Driver. So at that point, Professor Mankad already took one student. He already knew someone, and then Professor Driver was interested in me. So then I decided that, okay, it's sounds good, and we agree on certain things, and his research interest was also quite interesting to me, and he was also working in the field of organic synthesis, and at the same time he was also kind of sort of starting to venture the field of medicinal chemistry. So that was perfect for me. I know that I'll have what I want, and then I will also start learning what I'm interested in. So that kind of thing was sort of just came together. So yeah, I was working with Professor Tom Driver. His area of research is organic synthesis, methodologies, and medicinal chemistry.
Yeah, what a nice fit with what your path had taken you so far. That's really good. How many students started with you as new PhD students, just like in the department?
So in the department at that time, if I remember, there were 25 students. And then everyone had interest in either organic, physical, inorganic, analytical chemistry, and then there were also some of my friends who were interested in biochemistry and the biological field. So there were 25, if I'm not if like if I remember correctly, there were 25 people who actually were there for that particular year.
Yeah, that's a good group. It's not too big, but
Yeah.
it's there's like plenty of people to take classes with. I assume you took classes too.
Yeah, we had to take classes, yes. Yeah.
Did you have to TA as well?
Yes.
For
Yeah.
the whole time or just in the
It
beginning?
was not for the whole time. So initially, you know how it works, right? So if your professor has funding or something, and if he's able to
On a grant.
support the graduate students, then definitely he can provide the research assistantship. But at that time, what was mandatory for all the fresher was to actually take 1 year of TA. That was compulsory for everyone. So whatever it is, we have to TA. That was sort of a mandatory thing. So I TA'd for total of 3 years, and the rest of the so I finished my I started my program in 2014, and I finished at 2020. And so I have done TA for 3 years, and the other 3 years I was provided research assistantship.
Nice. What did you think of like TAing, or did it Did it make you interested in the teaching aspect of research, of like academia, or not?
So, I mean, I never wanted to work in academia, to be very, to be very frank. But I love teaching. The thing is that, the thing is that I loved imparting knowledge to people. That's what I think. Like the, what I found that sometimes it's easy, you know, like for people to make, you know, you can make them understand what you are learning or what you have learned, right? So it's very important for the students who are in undergrad, right? So like if some of them, they get some of the concepts correct or right when they're learning, it also makes them interested in that particular field. So
true.
So that's one thing which I loved. So I mean, I was never interested in academia, but I always liked teaching. Like if there were students who had questions about what they're learning or if they needed help or something. So that was one thing which I loved.
Yeah, that's great. I think that PhD students, not should, but it's a good experience to have to TA and experience that, because, you know, if you're going to be in academia, you're going to need to do that a lot.
Right.
And if you're not, you know, even in industry, you know, I've had times where I'm mentoring, you know, newer employees or younger engineers, and being able to teach and explain something complex is a valuable skill.
Yes. Yeah, because in industry also we learn from our seniors, right? Our colleagues.
Yeah.
And we also like impart those kind of like knowledge to whoever is joining, right? Out of like fresh out of their PhD or so yeah. So it's always like mentoring and teaching. Like I loved it, but I was never interested in academia as such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. All the paths are welcome, right?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit in general, or like high level, what your research was, what your project or your dissertation focused on.
Okay. So my
speaking of teaching to someone who doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah. So
here you go.
Yeah, I'll try to explain you like in simple terms or not to make it very complicated. So I was basically working on some methodology where we can synthesize some small molecules through different type of catalysis, right?
Okay.
Because we know that there are several ways to make a molecule, right? But then we need to also know that what are the different aspects. For example, if you can make a molecule, say you can do 20 steps to make a molecule, right? Mm-hmm. But that also like includes lot of amount, like lot of reagents, lot of waste and everything, right? So, but then if you come up with a method where you can synthesize the same molecule, let's say in 2 or 3 steps, right? Then it has more advantage, like at the end, whatever product that you want, right? You can get that in little bit higher yield as compared to 20 steps where at different step, you never know if the chemistry is going to work or what kind of yield you have, right? So that's basically the methodology like project that I was working on. So we were synthesizing different small molecules using the different types of catalysis. And interestingly, what happened was some of the molecules that we synthesized for my project was also found to be active for a project that we were working with, a pulmonary artery hypertension. So that's a disease. It's a disease. It's not very common disease, but it does have like a lot of repercussions and all. And there is no cure for the disease. So once it is diagnosed, like the median rate of survival is only 5 to 10 years. So we had a collaboration with the medicinal department of UIC. So those kind of molecules that I synthesized for my project, they were also found to be useful for those kind of like targets that we were working on.
From my perspective, but maybe not, it feels unique that you are working on something as basic science as synthesis and methodology, and you're also seeing it be applied, you know, to a in this case, medical project as well.
Yeah. So that was, yeah, that was really actually cool.
Yeah. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So you are wrapping up your PhD. Do you have a sense for, or at the time you're wrapping up your PhD, do you have a sense for what you wanted to do next?
Yes. I did have some sense, but then since I'm an international student, so we also have, you know, like there are certain like visa restrictions and all this kind of stuff. So at that time, so being an international student and on student visa is called F1 visa. So so after a certain time, like when you are graduating, right? So you have like 3 years of the same student visa. So that was one kind of thing that was sort of a restriction for me, because I tried to apply for the industry jobs, but at that time, what people were looking at, like some experience after PhD or, you know, some more, and then also at that time, like people were not sponsoring, because we were, you know, that was one thing. I had a sense of like what to do next. So then I applied. But then I did not take my chances. So I applied to industry as well as I applied to other universities for postdoc. So then I actually fortunately like got an offer from Scripps Research. It's in California. So there I got an offer about medicinal chemistry postdoc. So at that time, like what I thought was like, yeah, this is an added advantage for me. Like what I have done, I will have extensive like experience and application of like or more deeper understanding, because in university, like we are restricted by a few things, right? For example, we don't have those proper kind of experiments that we can do at our own need or something, but when you are applying for a postdoc or something, they do have those kind of things. So yeah, at Scripps, like I had a chance of working as a postdoc in medicinal chemistry. So yeah, that was really a nice experience. It was a short experience, but it was a nice experience. I got to learn a lot of things, and then within a year of my postdoc, I started applying for the industry. And at that time, like I got a job offer from where I'm working now.
That's great.
Yeah.
A lot of people I talk to who do a postdoc, even not because they want to be a professor, but just as like another step.
Yeah.
You know, the best way I think to do a postdoc is to explore a slightly different, you know, field related, but something different, and expand your skills. And especially if you're going into industry, because I'm sure all the different types of chemistry that you've done now over your studies and postdoc are only helping you in your current position.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's what I would like to if you haven't had an opportunity to do something in your PhD, it's a very good time when you are actually like applying for postdoc. Like do something in your postdoc that will actually help you transition to wherever you want to go from there on.
That's a good point, because it's, you know, that it's short term too. You're not committing to another 5 years, you know, you're committing, I think it's on a 1 year basis. Usually
it's on a 1 year basis. Yes.
And so it could be as little as 1 year of just pursuing that intermediate step to what you want to do.
Yeah. And also another thing, like there are many like places, for example, you can apply to universities, and also you can also do an industrial postdoc. So that's what like I was very interested, because Scripps, where I was working as a postdoc, right? It was sort of a mid-size, you know, like a biotech company. It was a non-profit, but at the same time, it had all the things that we actually are like also doing in industry. So I would rather like work in a kind of an industrial postdoc than working in a university, because that also gives you a very good transition and also gives you a broader aspect of what you are going to do next. So, like, and also if you are really interested in working at that particular place, right? There are like many, always like there is a chance that they will convert you to full-time position at the particular. So that's another very important aspect of doing a postdoc in a, like, let's say a national lab or an industrial postdoc or something like that. So,
So
yeah.
when you were at Scripps, was there less of an emphasis on publishing and more an emphasis on the actual work?
Yes. So as you know, right, when we're doing our PhD, our goal was to work, to learn, but at the same time, you need to have some publications, right, at the end of your PhD. So, but at Scripps, it was completely like you're doing research. Like if something comes out, that comes out as a patent or you know, a collaboration with different industry or something, or a publication, but it's not something that you are actually like doing. That was not the mindset. So yeah, it definitely was like not a kind of a publishing sort of mentality over there. It's like if you're working, if you do something novel, if you do something interesting, definitely there are chances that you will get a patent or get an article out of it. But yeah, that was not the sole criteria of doing your research.
Cool.
Yeah.
And can you give me a little summary of what your work was there or what it was like?
So I started working just at the time when the pandemic hit.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you that. Did you
Yeah.
graduate during the pandemic too?
Yes. Yeah. 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 I was like, I can proudly say I'm a first generation PhD to defend my thesis online. Yeah. So it was, yeah, but luckily it was good that I had everything set. Like I got my offer in February and then right from March 2020, like all the things started shutting down and everything. But in industry or even at these research places, right, there was like different protocols where you can like all the employees, they are not together working, so they were shift basis or something. So luckily at that time Scripps was also working on and I had the chance of working as well. So there, interestingly, what happened was we got a big funding from NIH about the COVID-19 thing. So it was from the Melinda and Gates Foundation. So and also from NIH, those they had a very good like grant for doing research on COVID-19. So I was luckily a part of that, and so we were working on identifying a small molecule that was going to target the COVID-19 virus. So simultaneously, if you know that the medicine that is now like available for COVID-19 is Paxlovid, right? That's from Pfizer. So Pfizer actually started that, and so they did find a molecule which is by a technique called repurposing. So that there was already a molecule which was used, you know, sort of for a different disease or something like that, and they started their finding from that particular molecule. So we were also working simultaneously on another molecule, taking Pfizer's molecule as an example. So but
Interesting.
we were working on different aspect of the drug. So yeah, I was luckily like part of doing that
That's
research
cool.
as well. Yeah.
Wow, you really got thrown into a big project at that point, huh?
Yes. And yeah, I'm really happy that I got two patents out of it.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
awesome. In 1 year.
Yeah, in 1 year. And because after that, like, so after I actually like left the place, there were my colleagues who were working on the same project, so they were continuing that project, and yeah, we got good publications out of it. But
Nice.
before the COVID-19 that project, I was actually working on another project that was about the malaria. So we were working on anti-malarial agents as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another
Another.
worldwide problem. So,
Yes, yes, yes. So Melinda and Gates Foundation is actually basically like they are They support a lot of like funding for infectious disease as well as the pandemic like HIV, then malaria and all those kind of stuff. So yeah, I was also working on anti-malarial project, and then simultaneously I started working on the COVID-19 project as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff. Very impactful. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me what you're doing now.
So then like after I finished my postdoc over there, I started applying for my jobs, and I'm now working currently in a company called Edesis. So it's a part of a bigger company called UDC, that is Universal Display Corporation. So this company basically manufactures the OLED screen, which we have on our phone and all. So it's basically materials chemistry, but we are all closely working with the organic part of it. So organic molecules.
Mm-hmm.
So and then Edesis basically is a CRO. It's a contract research organization. And we have very big pharmaceutical clients like Pfizer, BMS, Novartis, and Incyte, and all other clients. And we get projects from them. So it depends on what the client needs, and then we are just working with them.
Cool.
So here also we are actually working on like small molecule medicinal chemistry. We are also working on scaling up, which is called process chemistry. And there's also a manufacturing part of it, but we are not doing it. This is a separate like unit for mm-hmm. inside the company. But basically, what my role over here is anything which we are synthesizing could be from a milligram scale to a gram or a kilogram scale.
So that's for example, if a pharmaceutical company had a contract with you because they know there's a molecule that they want to use in a drug, but mm-hmm. they don't, but it's not something that can be made in big quantities.
Mm-hmm.
They would hire you to do that processing research.
Yes.
Just to sort of design the,
yes,
or see if it's possible to do that.
Exactly. I am in the R&D like discovery. So we basically like also synthesize different molecules or, you know, different, for example, if they, a company finds a molecule which is a target, right? A molecule or a hit, which is supposed to show the properties which is expected of it, right? So
yep.
we do a lot of like SAR studies, like structure activity relationship and all. We sort of like make different modification to the molecule, and we also like supply them, and then they can do the testing and everything to do the biological studies and all. So once, like, if a company like figures out that this is particular molecule is actually like going to be a great molecule for this particular disease or whatever they want, right? Then
mm-hmm.
when we are synthesizing in small scale, it's like our goal is to synthesize a compound, right? So we do we do a lot of chemistry. We try. We do literature search, and or sometimes even the client can provide us procedure for what they have done. And based on a similar like method, we try to do that. So that goal, once it is accomplished, and when we know that this compound is working, then there should be like, we need to know how this scale can be taken from a small scale to a larger scale, right? Because the chemistry completely varies, right? And when we are doing our last scale synthesis, there are different factors also which we should take into account, right? For example, safety is a very big factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you run a small scale, it's fine. You can use any kind of pyrophoric agents. You can use so many different things. And it's like just a chemistry, an organic chemist would do. But when you're taking it to a larger scale, right, you need to know what are the safety things. You need to know how to minimize the waste. You also need to know if you can use a different or the eco-friendly like green solvents or something. Kind of things are also there. So that's why it's interesting. Like once we have something established on a small scale, then we try to do a sort of a process transfer, And then there's a process chemist who actually takes into account, and then they do the sort of study to make that process, viable for making large quantities of the molecule.
Wow, that's very cool. That's
Yeah.
like a whole business that I didn't really know existed, but it makes so
Okay.
much sense when you explain it, you know? Yeah, very cool.
Like when at that time when Pfizer found Paxlovid, right? That molecule which is now prescribed for the patients. So there were we actually had a chance of manufacturing like a similar kind of molecule for another pharmaceutical company. So at that time, so like following the procedure and all, we did a lot of step minimization and then a lot of like kind of discovery part of it, like what process should be good, what process should be safe, and then those part was given to the process chemist, and then they took it from there, and luckily we got to meet huge quantities of that particular molecule. So yeah, so that's
Yeah.
very interesting actually.
Very interesting.
yeah
Very relevant to all of our lives right now,
yeah yeah
too,
yeah
which is fascinating. That's great. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna move to my three wrap-up questions, but before I get there, what Rick band do you do for fun?
For fun. Okay, so I love listening to audibles, or
Oh.
that's one thing. Like I'm a avid listener. I used to read. But now
Yeah.
I don't have patience for reading as such, so I listen to a lot of like audibles, short stories and all.
Yeah.
I love watching series or something on TV, and then I love cooking and I love eating as well. So that keeps me busy during the weekends. So
Yeah.
I like do a lot of research on like. Okay, I should be cooking something like this, or try different cuisine, or and then I have a dog, who is
Okay.
like who takes most of my time,
Yeah.
and yeah, he's a Pomeranian and a Husky mix, so he's a Pomsky,
Okay.
and yeah, he's very fun loving and he's very playful, so most of my time goes spending time with him. We do go for some sort of hiking, and he loves hiking, so. That keeps me busy.
Yeah, I bet. I assume
Yeah.
you don't really work from home, right? 'Cause you're in the lab a lot.
No, I never work from home.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only time I worked from home was during my last semester of my PhD when we were not allowed to go to the
Yeah.
lab. Yeah, and at that time I was writing my thesis, so it all turned out to be like, like a sort of a blessing. Like it
Yeah.
was, yeah, I mean
You
like I
couldn't be
did
in the lab and get distracted, right? So you had to
exactly,
write.
and
Yeah.
I'm like I can do multiple work, but then at the same time when I'm writing thesis or something, I really had to focus completely on that,
Yeah.
so that did reduce a lot of distraction, not going to lab and not working. And my
That's.
supervisor was very cool with the fact, because so I graduated in May 2020. And I actually informed him in December, in October 2019 that I will be graduating around this time. So he was very kind, and he is like that. He's very kind for the senior students, and he completely gives him time for like 5 to 6 months where you don't have too much work to do. You
Yeah.
can only focus on your thesis and applying for jobs and all. So.
Yeah.
So that was really nice of him.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's not like you were asked to like TA a class at the end of, your final year,
Exactly.
which would have
Yeah.
taken a lot more of your time.
A
So.
lot of time, yeah. Especially grading and all. I mean, that did take a
Yeah.
lot of time.
Well, great. That sounds like quite a list of activities that keep you
Yeah.
busy, which is good.
It, yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna move to my three questions. So my first question for you is, can you, thinking back, describe something that was challenging, in your PhD process?
So one thing that was really challenging was that it was completely a different place, a new place to start with, right? And I did not have any idea about how things work here. It was completely from a different background, right? I mean, the basic science is fine. We do we do things everywhere. Science is universal, right? Everyone does the same thing. But yeah, that culture was a little bit difficult, and sort of adjusting to, you know, like the language, to understand people, that was some sort of challenging thing. And but when it was in research, what I found most challenging was to take on a project, right? Because you never know what project will make you successful and what will not work, right? Until you do a deep dive or something. So there were a few projects which had some initial like data or something that was already done by our some senior students. So it was, that was kind of sort of challenging, like what research or what project should I start with?
So because you don't, it's like a fear of picking the wrong one and then going
right I mean, obviously there are failures when you're doing research, right? But it should not be a long-term failure, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you understand something is not working sooner than later, right? That's always good for you, because you're not going to spend a lot of time figuring out something that is not going to work, let's say, after 3 years. That's completely a disaster. So that was really challenging for me, like to sort of find or to get a project that will work. So that was,
Wow, that's a good way to put that. And did it also kind of, like, did you feel alone in that decision too? Because it was only, like, it was you as your project. So if it's the wrong one, it's you who will suffer and you alone, right?
Yeah, that was a fear. I mean, like, that was the main fear. Like, if something, because ultimately what we're doing is for us, right? Like,
yeah.
Like if something happens, it's you are the person who have to deal with it. So that fear was I would say it was completely my own lone kind of fear or something, that I would say. Yeah.
Great. Okay, next question. So you've given a lot of good advice in this conversation already, but is there something specific advice you would give to yourself in your first year of your PhD?
Yeah, I would definitely say that do not rush when you're taking decision or when you are starting something new, right? Give your time, do your research properly, and always, it's always better to reach out to people. You should never keep yourself away from asking questions, because asking too many questions is not bad, because at the end of the thing, like, you are the person who is going to be benefiting from this. So do your research, do ask questions, reach out to people, talk to them. And also another important thing is, like, when you are joining a group, right, it's always, always better to talk to the students.
Yeah.
Right.
You
have a one-on-one meeting with your professor, it's fine. You have a group meeting, it's fine. But then at the end of the day, you should always be able to talk to the students who are working alone, because you need to know what perspectives they have for their, let's say, for the supervisor, or in general, what about the different, like, lab culture, right? Sometimes lab culture can also make your life very difficult when you're doing a PhD, right? So you need to know. So it's always better to talk to the lab members to get an idea about the research. And you should always check out the publication website of the professor, right? What kind of funding he or she has, what kind of papers or articles that they have recently published, what is the frequency of their publications, or is it like let's say a research which is stagnant for a lot of time or something. So those kind of things, if you have a general idea, it's always good to have those kind of ideas.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great
point. And never rush. And also, like, it's always good to talk to multiple people at the same time, because you also need to find a fit, right? I mean, like, let's say everything is you are not committed to only one person or as such, right? You have that freedom to talk to different people and then find out which one is best for you, and then if that works, it works. If not, just move on. So that's the thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, and my last question, and I like to ask this because it's you know, we experiencing, you know, 5 or 6 years of this, you know, there were many challenges and difficult times, but I like to sort of ask people to look back and reflect on a fun memory or a good story or something that they remember fondly about their time. So do you have one of those?
So I guess it's always special whenever you have your first paper published, right? So it took almost 2.5 years for my first paper to get published. But at that moment, like, I did all my things, I submitted whatever was needed, and then with my friends, we were going to Mammoth National Park. So it was complete. It was like I still remember. It was a spring break, and we were going out there. And out of nowhere, I get an email from my boss saying that, congratulations, this is your first paper. So,
wow.
So yeah, that was like, that is still my memorable moment out of my PhD. Like, I still remember that.
Yeah, that's great. And you were with friends to celebrate.
Yeah, I was with my friends and all. Nice. And my friends who were also like doing their PhD and everyone had, you know, have their moments and all. And mm-hmm. like, and I'm really blessed to have friends who were very supporting. Was never a sort of, you know, a jealousy or kind of, so that was, I still remember, like, we were 7-8 people, and then I got this message, and then I told them, and like, we had a lot of fun, like, after party and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, that still remains as my very special moment for me during my PhD.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that story a lot. I feel like it could be in a movie, you know.
Yeah.
A movie about a PhD. So not
a movie about
a
PhD. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up my questions. Rick Brand, thank you so much. Is there anything we missed? Anything you wanna, you know, add or anything?
I think I think I have given a lot of advice.
Yes, you have. You definitely have.
It was so much fun talking to you, but I have never done something like this before. So this is also my first time experiencing something like this. So this will again be a very special moment for me.
Good. Yeah. I find that with a lot of my guests that they've never been on a podcast before because, you know, in what place would they have been? So it's really fun to talk to them and have them have that experience. So thanks again. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Rick Band for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates at Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.